Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Fine Food Friday, February 5th. I'm Ray Graff. Today on the show, author and baker Amy Halloran joins us. She is on the line to answer your questions. And let me tell you something. She is cuckoo about grain. If you have a question about pancakes, baking, biscuits, bread, whatever, all things grain are on the table today. You got a question for the Ambassador of Flour? Give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Always upping the energy level is Amy Halloran, and she is here today to answer your questions. We kick it off after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's a Food Friday, and joining us today is the Ambassador of Flour, Amy Halloran, who is here to help you with all of your baking needs. Amy does much more than bake, though. She's a writer and change agent working to add social values and economic viability to farms and communities. The author of the new breadbasket, she's an activist seeking to change the way we feed each other. She's also an incredible baker who can handle just about anything. So if you have a question about flour, food sustainability, baking, give us a call, 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But the number again is 800-348-2551. Amy Halloran, welcome back to Food Friday.
Oh, Ray, I can't believe we're not doing this in person.
I know, right? How are things going during the pandemic for you?
It's a pandemic. I'm okay. I'm doing good enough. How about you?
Yeah, you know, I'm irritated by the whole thing, but most things irritate me. It doesn't matter whether there's a lockdown or not, I'm irritated. But you know, what irritates me a lot is, and I think I talked to you about this the last time you were on, way back when, you know, since the lockdown, everybody and his or her mother and brother is a baker. And all of a sudden, oh, look at the sourdough that I made. It's beautiful. Well, I got so sick of it, I got off of Facebook and Instagram completely. Kept the Twitter account, but I'm not into the social media anymore. But you were so far ahead of the curve with the baking of breads. Have you been amazed at the explosion of popularity of this?
Well, yes and no. I mean, once I got over my first shock, it makes perfect sense, right?
Right.
You know, like here came this thing that we had never experienced in our lifetime. And so why not dive in to something that's completely unfamiliar, sourdough baking,
right,
and try to figure it out. You know, baking bread is so comforting, and we certainly need our distractions seriously these days.
Yeah.
So it makes a ton of sense, and it's great to see people figuring it out. It's great to see people abandoning it and let other people do it too. You know, I love baking. I love when anybody explores it. And if they decide that they need me or their favorite bakery to do it instead, you know, it's all very fine.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking of, first of all, in all full disclosure, I had no idea until yesterday that you were on the show today. But a couple of days ago, I was thinking about you because I made a peanut butter and jelly sandwich and it was on really good bread. And I got to thinking about how much better it is when you have a really good bread. It just makes anything that you have substantial.
Yeah, it really does. Right, these days I'm into squash sourdough bread, which the squash, we grew butternut squash this year. When I say we, I mean my husband.
Yeah.
I didn't do anything. But I cook it. And you can, my friend Ellie Markovich, who used to live in this area, and many people in the Troy and Albany area will know how much fun Ellie is to cook with. We still cook remotely, and we do this stuff with squash where you can cook the whole squash, and then you can grind up the seeds and pulp, and there, along with the flesh, the seeds, pulp, and skin and flesh, you've got a full ingredient, and it's no waste cooking. It works really, really, I mean, of course, you can do whatever you're going to do with your squash anyway, but we make this for bread, for fritters, for tortillas, for English muffins. It's so fun. And I got back into the rhythm of the squash sourdough bread. And every time I take a slice, I think, oh, this is, it's so good. It's just so much better. It's a little bit sweeter and moister. And I use all whole grains, and the squash and the sweetness of it helps things rise even a little bit more. It's a really fun bread.
Well, that's great. So this is one thing that during this time of enforced staying at home, that is one thing that you have rediscovered. Have you discovered anything new in your kitchen, in your oven, that you have been playing around with over the last several months?
Well, cookies, you know, of course, there was the whole Christmas cookies phenomenon. I really got into that.
Yeah.
For a while, I got back into English muffins, another griddle sourdough favorite, amazed at how much that works. Biscuits were my sourdough for all of this period. You know, I just love a biscuit.
Yeah.
And you can use basically the same flour ratio between, you know, when I mix my flour to make pancakes, it's a mix that I can use to make biscuits too. You just add when you're making a biscuit, you put in a ton of fat and a little bit of liquid, and that makes anything. You know, you can have just a little soup and there's dinner of a five-star style at home when you have a biscuit, or, you know, a vegetarian pot pie with biscuits on top.
Yeah,
it's really nice.
I can't agree with you more. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, it was one of those bitter cold days. We had homemade chicken noodle soup and baguettes, and butter. And, you know, how can you lose?
Mm-mm. Oh, Ray, I wish I had gotten my act together and brought you over some cookies. I'm making shortbread cookies with, that's one thing I really enjoy is shortbread with cardamom.
Yeah.
In it. And I've been making those for Christmas, and now they're changing their shape for Valentine's Day. So I'll get one to you the next time I'm in Albany.
You'll
taste it then.
The next time you come, you are required to bring pancakes, okay? That's only thing that I require of you next time that you are in the studio. Amy Halloran is our guest. She is the ambassador of flour. You got a baking question, you got a flour question, you got anything at all having to do with baking in the kitchen. She is your expert. The number is 800-348-2551. Laura's been waiting a long time, so before our first break, let's go to Laura in Princetown. Laura, you're on.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Sure thing.
Okay. You're going to kill me because my question is about sourdough.
No, not at all. Go ahead.
So I got into sourdough before the pandemic, but not by much. And I just have a quick question about it. So I use a 100% rye recipe, and I make it using a sponge, and then I add the rest of the flour to it. And I actually bake it in a loaf pan. And the recipe doesn't say when to take the bread out of the loaf pan. So do I let it cool completely in the loaf pan, or do I take it out when it's still hot? I just wasn't sure.
You know, that's a really good question. And I am wondering if it's a little bit different for rye bread. And I'm going to walk over to my cookbooks and see. I'm going to go to a cookbook called Home Baked, which is from Denmark. So it has some really good rye bread instruction. You know, with rye, I hope your recipe tells you to let it cool for a really long time, because that's one thing with rye bread is that there's you really want to let those starches settle. They gelatinize in baking, and then they settle. And great, 24 hours at least. Some people say 36, some people say 48.
Yeah, no, I think my recipe book suggested 2, but that wasn't happening.
Yeah, it does take a thing. And actually, some people say, this cookbook is not specifying whether to take the bread out of the tin. But I also recall people saying that it's really nice to let it cool inside a linen cloth or a dish towel. So that would mean taking it out of the pan. And I think that would be good because the heat's going to, you're going to get condensation on the edges and bottom of the loaf. So let's say, now we've come to the end of this. Let's have you take it out and wrap it in your favorite dishcloth and let it do its cooling there.
All right. Can I ask a follow-up question?
Heck yeah.
The reason I'm asking is because so I take it out, and if I put it on like a cooling rack bottom side down, when I do finally cut into it the next day, the bottom is always very compressed. So I've also tried letting it cool with like putting it upside down, I guess, and it doesn't seem to help. And so I was wondering if it had to do with the, like, that I was taking it out to cool too soon or something.
Maybe
it's not related. I don't know.
No. It could be a couple of things. Maybe you're taking it out of the oven too soon and it's not fully cooking. There's that. Do you use a thermometer?
Yeah.
And it's going to the temperature that the recipe says?
Oh, the recipe doesn't. I don't know. What temperature is a done temperature for bread? I wouldn't know.
It varies a little bit. So what you want to do is look up some other rye bread recipes and make sure you're baking it to that specific temperature, because that's really important, especially in rye, which can be, you know, more of a pudding-like.
Oh.
Dough, and you want to get it all the way up.
Yeah, and that's what it is.
Okay. Hey, Laura, we got to take a break here. I'm sorry to say. We are overdue
Good
here
luck.
By a minute, and thank you very much, Laura, for the call. Amy Halloran is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. We've only just begun. It's flours and grains and such. More on the way. Vox Pop, it's a Food Friday. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. Amy Halloran is here, the ambassador of flour. And, you know, I want to make it clear that when I was ranting about social media, it wasn't sourdough. I love sourdough. It was just seeing a million pictures of people's baking projects in my feed. And that's what, you know, I love sourdough as much as the next person, right?
Yes. Exactly. Of course you do.
Exactly. Hey, I got a question for you. Before we go to the email, you had mentioned the proper temperature for rye. You know, when you put the flour, I mean, when you put the dough in the oven, you got to make sure it's the right temperature. So the other night, we're making banana bread at home. And when I say we, I mean my wife. But I was standing there with a glass of bourbon, kibitzing. And she said, you know, I can't get this to, it's not fully done in the middle. And she kept putting it back in. And I said, why don't you use the meat thermometer and check the temperature? And she looked at me like I was completely not that smart. Is that a wrong thing to say?
No, it's a great thing to do. I use a temperature in my breads all the time, especially with higher hydration sourdoughs, which is what is, you know, a lot of people are doing these days. It's hard to know if your bread is really at the temperature that it's gone. I mean, oven temperatures vary wildly.
Yeah.
There's so many variabilities. If you know where the bread dough has gone after 45 minutes, you'll be better off. Yeah.
Are you partial to a gas oven or an electric oven when you're baking?
You know, I love gas, and I should be more precise as a baker. But that tells you what kind of an improvisational person I am.
I'm an artist.
Improvisational, or just a goofball. I don't know. So I think a classic, more classical pastry, precision-minded person would want an electric oven. And you can get like a gas stovetop with an electric oven. But I just said, let's just get gas.
You know?
And I don't have a fancy stove. A few years ago, our oven broke after 23 years in this house, and we had bought it for $25, and we waited till it really broke, where, you know, everything wasn't working on it. And we were faced with, should we buy this, you know, a fancy oven?
Yeah.
And we just got a regular oven. Nothing, we got nothing fancy. I found that another woman who writes cookbooks, she recommended, oh, I just got this. And I said, oh, well, if that's good enough for her,
sure,
I think I'll just get a regular oven. So you don't need something fancy. You do need something that's going to, you know, go to temperature and stay there.
I think part of it can be the container you use. Now, ordinarily, when we make banana bread, it's in a clear Pyrex, and we couldn't find that. And I forget what we used, but I think it changed the equation as far as heating through. Or am I wrong?
Absolutely. And if you normally use a Pyrex, you see glass bakeware will, that's like raising the temperature already.
Mm.
So if you're used to using glass, then you're used to it cooking faster.
Ah,
yeah.
Did not know that. This email came in from Anne. And Anne says, well, the subject heading is Brees Special Roast Malt. And she writes, my son, who brews beer, left a bag of this in the freezer. It tastes delicious, and I was wondering if I could make something with it. Any ideas?
Oh, I love this question. That is so fun. Okay, so I'm assuming that this is whole kernel malt. And so your son, I think is what the caller said,
yeah.
Has left you a gift, right? So think of grape nuts. Now, grape nuts are malted barley and malted wheat. And so you can make homemade grape nuts. You could take the barley and grind it up in a little, if people have a spice grinder, you know, which is a coffee grinder,
yeah,
that they use just for spices, because you don't want the coffee flavor, which, and the oils will stay in.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you'll be able to grind up, like, say, take a tablespoon of that malted barley, grind it up, and you could add it to baked goods, add it to your pancakes, add it to your waffles. It's really, really good. You can go really crazy with this stuff. The problem is you can't use it in the same volume as you would a flour, because the malting process, which is a process of taking grains and allowing them to grow a little bit, you soak it and you get it warm. So it's this germination process. You're letting the seed grow, and it begins an enzymatic reaction that unlocks the starches in the grain so that the brewer or the distiller is able to tap into that sugar store for fermentation. And that's why these things taste so good, is that they are sweet. And malted barley adds a lovely flavor to all kinds of baking projects. Just do a small ratio, like a tablespoon of it to a cup.
Hmm. Okay. This is from Jennifer, and Jennifer writes a question about cinnamon rolls. Jennifer writes, my cinnamon rolls never rise. I confess that I use my bread machine to make the dough, but once I roll them up, they barely rise. I like to keep my house quite cold, lower 60s, so I set the dough near the wood stove, but I don't think that's enough. I never made them in the summer, and I do tend to think of them as a cold weather treat, I think is what she meant. Any suggestions? Can I put them in the oven to rise, but at what temperature, and should the door be opened or closed? Would really love nice melt-in-your-mouth cinnamon rolls. And that's from Jennifer.
Okay. So a lot of things could be going on besides the temperature. It's probably an enriched dough, which means that it's got butter. And the butter is a lot for a yeasted or sourdough dough to carry in trying to raise.
Yeah.
So sometimes it needs, I wonder if that bread machine is mixing it too intensely for what the enriched dough needs. And I would think that switching to another method could be the issue. making sure that your yeast is lively and that it's getting activated the right way, but definitely rising in the oven. If you have, if you don't think any of those other elements are problems, you do want a warm place to rise, or just let it rise like crazy, because it's time will get things someplace too. You know, it's just going to rise faster in a shorter time. So you could leave it on the counter, but maybe you need to leave it on the counter for 4 hours instead of an hour in a colder temperature. That said, you could put your oven on very low, like 100 degrees, and let it be there. If you have a gas oven and it has a pilot, you can have it in there with the door shut. If your oven doesn't go down to like 100 degrees, I would definitely crack it open. You know, if you're into like the 200 degree realm, another option is to use your cooler and take some warm, very warm or boiled and slightly cooled water, put a couple of jars of that in the cooler and create a little proofing box. And then you've got another way to really control the environment and hopefully get some better success.
Amy Halloran is our guest. Now, full disclosure before we go to the phones again, do you have or have you ever used a bread making machine?
You know, I have one in the basement. I got one because I wanted to, you know, I got it at a yard sale or something.
Yeah.
And I wanted to be able to test recipes for that, but
yeah.
It never took really with me. And I started to, I got it out for a friend of mine who has a mill, said, do you have any luck with bread machines? I said, oh, okay, I'll try it. By the time I had gotten through one recipe, the customer who had consulted her with how to use it had already made bread 10 times in her bread machine and really figured it out. So there's it's a whole other thing. And the beauty is there's a lot of people who are in this game with you. So that's another thing the bread machine cinnamon roll writer could do to problem solve,
yeah,
is to Google bread machine cinnamon roll dough and see if there's more suggestions out there in the universe than mine.
Now, but you're not against bread machines per se.
No, I'm really not against any kind of baking. Any way that it fits in people's lives is really great. And I'm certainly very much for machines. When I wrote my book, I really did a job on my arms, and I don't have the luxury of just expecting my arms to do whatever they used to anymore. I have to be very careful about the whatever I undertake.
Yeah.
So I use a stand mixer and my Cuisinart all the time for mixing things. I don't romance the tactile connection with dough. It's a beautiful thing, but I don't do any hand mixing because I save my hands for writing and, you know, chopping up food for dinner and things like that. So there's no shame in any process that you use.
Romancing the tactile connection to dough. That is brilliant work, Amy Halloran. Marcia in Altamont, you're on. Go ahead.
I love that, too. That was great. So anyway, I just got my hands on your book, and I haven't really started to read it yet. I just got it yesterday. But I wanted to ask you about sprouted grains. I have an interest in learning how to use sprouted grains to make bread. I'm into the tactile connection, so there's no machines involved here.
Great. Well, sprouted grains are really fun. And are you asking about sprouting the grains and using them whole, like in Ezekiel bread, or sprouting the grains and drying them and milling them?
I would really like to be able to. I know you can buy sprouted grain flours online, which mm-hmm. doesn't really appeal to me. I would like to be able to know, can I sprout grains at home? How do I do that? And then if I want to make them into flour, how do I do that?
Okay, so you've got a couple of routes you can travel. That, and this is a great question to have with the whole malting description, because what you're doing with sprouting is the same as malting. You're germinating the seed. And if you've ever made, salad green sprouts, what you do is you'll take some grain kernels, you'll soak them in a jar, and do that for 24 hours. No, I think you rinse it at 12-hour intervals. So you'll soak it for 12 hours, drain it, give it some fresh water, drain it, and then you'll you want to set them in, dried out, but in a place where there's no sun, which I can never figure out. I guess because you don't want to stimulate the photosynthesis. But maybe put it up on top of your fridge, but you don't want to forget it. Put it somewhere where you're not going to forget it, and it's not going to get light. So solve that little math problem. and let it grow for a few days, and you'll be delighted to see some tails coming off of your grains. And you can use those in a few ways. There's some really good recipes for making entirely sprouted grain bread or crackers or something like that. And that's for that's one route. Another way you can do it is to use some flour and make a dough and add in the sprouted grains as an ingredient. So you can find recipes for that incorporate those as if they were raisins or nuts or oats or something like that. So you've got the sprouted grains in there. And then the third way is if you want to dry it, you're really setting yourself up for a big project, because you're going to need to do that whole germination process. And then you need to dehydrate the grains. You need to catch it at the right level, because that process that I was describing where you're unlocking the starches, you don't want to go too far where you're really starting to grow a plant. And I don't know, because then that plant is not going to want to grow your bread.
Right.
Because basically when we're in a bowl with flour, we're trying to tap into the enzymatic reactions that would be triggered in the field to grow a plant. And if you mess that up too much in the sprouting process, you'll lose your chance of rising dough, which is why sprouted grain flours are a lot more expensive than non-sprouted flours. It's a lot of labor and catching things at the right time.
All right, Marcia, thank you very much for the call. Amy Halloran is our guest on Vox Pop Food Friday today. Let's have one more here at least before the next break. Shane in New Paltz. Shane, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I recently made scones and they came out pretty good. However, well, every once in a while me and my wife were eating them, they would have like a metal-y taste, maybe towards the corners of the scone. They were orange, had a nice little orange flavor to them otherwise. And I'll hang up from here, but okay, just wondering if it has something to do with the baking powder.
Go ahead,
something along those lines.
Before you hang up, tell us what pan you use. What kind of a pan?
I made them on I rolled the dough and then cut out the scone shape and then put them on a baking tray.
Just a regular baking tray that hasn't given you any flavor problems otherwise?
No.
Okay, great. Well, very often with scones and biscuits, what you're running into with a metallic flavor is a little bit too much baking soda. So many recipes have a little too much baking soda, and it's really easy to overdo it. Or if you're finding it in irregular places, baking soda does tend to clump. So you want to make sure to either just press your baking soda or baking powder between your fingers, really crush it before you incorporate it with the flour, or blend everything with a sieve or a sifter, which is really nice to do with scones and biscuits because then you're thoroughly distributing it.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
You're
for
welcome.
The call.
Good hey, luck.
Let's take a quick break here. Amy Halloran is our guest. The ambassador of flour is with us. We have another 20 minutes or so. 800-348-2551. Pop. It's Food Friday. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. Amy Halloran is our guest today, and what fun we have. This email came in from Kathleen. Not sure you can do this one, Amy. We'll find out. How do you make good corn tortillas? What is the trick of doing it right? I follow the recipe on the bag of Maseca corn flour, in which you use only the corn flour and water. I knead the dough a bit. I divide the dough into the appropriate pieces and roll it out to the diameter suggested. I cook them in a hot frying pan, but they don't seem cooked, and I always cook them longer than the stated cooking time. They fall apart. They're just not like what I get when I buy a package of tortillas you could buy in a grocery store, and that's from Kathy.
Okay. So, you know, this is another grain processing question. It's all of a theme today, Ray. We're lined up. We're on this train of what you do to grains before they come to us. So the kind of corn flour that she has is has gone through a process of nixtamalization, and that is a way of treating corn with lye so that it's nutritionally more available, and it also happens to make these, you know, it makes tamales, it makes tortillas. However, I can't exactly speak to the problems because I haven't sampled too much of this, of hand tortilla making. I would guess that there is a bit of a problem with the ratio of liquid. All of this stuff is so so fussy in terms of hydration. And one thing you could do is look for if hopefully you or your neighbor or someone in your family has a scale, because when you start weighing your flour, whether it's masa or whatever flour that you're using, when you start weighing your flour rather than measuring it into cups, you're going to, as improvisational as I like to be, you do need to get the weights, the ratios proper. And I think that you'll have much, that would be my first troubleshooting suggestion on that.
Okay.
See if you can find a recipe that, that says weight, and also find a scale and give it a shot.
Amy Halloran is our guest. One more email and then back to the phones till the end of the show. This is from another Kathy, and she says, I made French bread dough in the bread machine. Is it now ready to bake? How long and at what temperature should I bake it in the regular oven?
Oh, wow. I'm afraid I don't have that information at hand.
Okay.
I would really take a look at, you know, if you don't have your bread machine's guides, I would go to the internet and.
Okay. We may have lost Amy. Amy, are you there? We may have lost Amy Halloran. The number here is 800-348-2551. Tell you what, Zach, since I know absolutely zippo about bread, why don't we hit a two-minute module and try to get her back on here? It is Vox Pop. It is Food Friday. Occasionally this week we've had a phone issue or two. She's calling back in. You want to try it? Okay, let's give that a try. Let's go to, is that Amy Halloran?
It is. It is. Ray Graff, how long? How have you been? It's been so long.
I'm sorry, we already have a winner. No, actually, you're on, and you were saying.
Yeah, so I was saying that I think you should look this one up on the internet to make sure that you get proper instructions if you don't have a guidebook for your own bread machine.
Fair enough. Now back to the phones we go, and Eric in Calicoon. Eric, you're on. Hello.
Hi, sorry. Okay. I had the phone on mute.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for taking my call. Here's my question. My boyfriend of 40 years and I are both bakers. I bake dessert. He bakes bread. And so it's a great division of labor. And he's been making really nice bread for a number of years using that no-knead method. Jim Sullivan, I guess, originated it. Maybe the answer is I should get your book promptly. But he's recently started making whole wheat bread by this method. And it always tastes like something's missing. But the first few times he made it, I said, did you forget to put salt in? And he didn't forget to put salt in. I just wonder, should he be doing something completely different using whole wheat flour?
That's a really great question. You know, it could be... So there could be a few things going on. My first suggestion would be there's a really great no-knead recipe that is made for – it's a seeded no-knead bread, and I'm struggling to remember the author's name. But I think if you Google it with the word – seeded no-knead bread with the mm-hmm. website that used to host it, it was – Culinate, Culinate, culinate.com.
Okay.
You'll find this recipe, and I'm pretty sure that she's written it to half white and half whole wheat. And you can add the seeds or you don't have to either. But mm-hmm. I think I'm kind of surprised. I wonder if there's something going on with the flour.
It seems to be the same result, whatever flour, you know, whether it's organic flour that we just bought or whether it's supermarket brand. At first, I thought the flour was off somehow or stale, but that doesn't seem to be the issue.
I would try this recipe and see if you get a bet. And actually, you know, King Arthur has a really nice, what am I thinking of? I was thinking, just poke around for a few variations because Jim Leahy from Sullivan Street Bakery did a great beginning on, you know, that no knead. And people have been riffing on that for years, but find one that has the ratios of whole wheat and white flour or all whole wheat.
Yeah.
You know, I definitely go all whole grain myself. There are people out there who've got some ratios that hopefully will get your bread back into the neighborhood you want.
All right. Well, thank you very much for that call. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Amy Halloran is our guest. Betty is in Stone Ridge. Betty.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yep.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi. So I've done a lot of baking over the years, but I haven't been baking for a number of years, and I decided to make some bagels for the first time.
Nice.
And somebody gave me a starter, a sourdough starter. But with all the things I read off the web, I could not figure out whether you're supposed to refill that, the mother, after you've done making the recipe or before you do the next batch. They came out great, by the way.
Oh, good. That's great. That's great. So where is your starter now? Is it in the fridge?
Right now, I had it out for a couple of days. I figured it could sour up for a while, and then I stuck it in the fridge because I don't bake a lot. You know, I don't have a whole family to bake for, so, you know, one batch of bagels could last me a week or more.
Right. So the trick with sourdough starter is that it is a combination of wild yeast and bacteria that are feeding on the starches that you give it in the flour. And that, just like us, the starter culture runs out of fuel
after a certain period, and that period is about 8 hours. So when you need to bake next, what I suggest you do is take the starter out, and you, since it was on the counter for a little while, would recommend taking it. I would feed it. You're going to need to refresh it when you bring it out from the fridge. And
no, I understand that. Yeah. The question was, are you supposed to do it before you started baking or when you've completed a baking? But I didn't understand that it was feeding off the flour. I thought it was capturing things from the air. So that made a difference. So if you feed it right after you've made a recipe, is that okay?
As long as you let it rise before you put it in the fridge. I mean, it depends on how much it depends on how much you have left. You don't want to feed. Okay, so number one, you don't want to feed it and put it directly in the fridge because that's like going to bed after dinner. You need to let it digest a bit on the counter, you know, like 6 or 7 hours, then you put it in the fridge. But it doesn't really matter, you know, before or after you make something. It's just about, you know, maintaining the culture so that it's a healthy thing and it hits its cycles of feeding and moving on. Feeding and resting and moving on.
I want to take it out of the fridge now, even though I wasn't going to bake it. Now, from what I understand, from what I read, is the way to feed it is to put back the same amount you took out. Is that correct? In other words, if I took 1 cup of mother out for the recipe, I need to put a cup of flour back with a cup of water?
I think that's kind of excessive, and you'll end up with more starter than what you want to do. And that's where you get into having too much discard. So if you mean when you feed it the next time for your recipe or
when I feed it for the recipe, are you supposed to replace it with what you took out or does it matter? I really don't know. I couldn't figure it out. I tried to watch a lot of videos and everyone was different and I got totally confused. And actually I didn't realize it was feeding off the flour. I always thought it was feeding out of things floating around in the air. So though they said put it lid. So I left it out because I know temperature helps fermenting. So I left it out for a couple of days and then I said,
It can help it too much because that's really, you know, you're like leaving a panting person needing water there, leaving it out on the counter for a few days. It's really exhausted its resources. Mm. So it wants regularity. It wants, you know, and the best way to do a regular feeding for an irregular baking is to stagger it so that when you're ready to bake, you may, if you don't bake once a week, if you end up baking like only once a month, you're going to need to refeed your starter maybe once before you bake it again, because it's got to have some time to get its energy back up and be ready to rise your bread. I know you've already looked at a lot of stuff. There's a couple of resources that I want to recommend. I have a really basic sourdough fact sheet on my website, which is, can I say that right?
Absolutely.
Okay. It's for free on amyhalloran.net. And then some other people who have really great resources, Maurizio, he has a website called The Perfect Loaf. And he really explains stuff very well. I know other people have come away understanding how to handle their starter really well with that.
All right. We only have a few minutes left here with Amy Halloran, but let's grab another call or two. And this is Beth in Schenectady. Beth, you're on.
Hi. This is going to be like sacrilege, but I actually use copious amounts of instant rise yeast, and I actually rise it in water with a little bit of sugar, even though you don't have to. And I put it in, I'm assuming my oven isn't isn't accurate. So I do a single rise in the oven at 200 degrees. I do get it to rise. It's totally unorthodox. Of course, it doesn't have as much gluten because it doesn't do a double rise, but it does work, and reviews are that it's good. But I would love to, improve on it somehow. What do you think of instant rise yeast?
Okay, good question.
I love it. I have it in the fridge. I use it when I don't have sourdough ready. There are no sins in baking, so you can absolve yourself from that. And but I really think that to get familiar with a recipe first, and then riff on it. So if you I don't know that the treating it with as you would active dry yeast is doing the best for it.
Okay.
Instant yeast is what they call, I think, hydrophilic, and so you really want to treat it as it's designed to be used. So that's to be incorporated with flour rather than incorporated with water. So I think
so you don't need that little bit of sugar. You don't need that tiny bit of sugar to activate it. You know, you feed the yeast
a little bit,
just dump it in the bread, the batter, the dough.
Yep. But just go to a cookbook, go online, grab a recipe, and do it a few times. And then you can really see how things are supposed to work and then vary from there, and you'll have a lot of fun.
Okay.
All right,
thank you.
Hey, Beth, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
For the call. We had a letter from Mike who said, for the caller asking about corn tortillas, I had great success with adding very hot water to the masa, bringing it together, and then letting it sit for an hour or so. Fully hydrates it, makes it very good for tortillas.
Beautiful. Yeah. Great advice.
Hey, how do people find you on the web once again, Amy Halloran?
So I'm amyhalloran.net, and if you're on Instagram, I'm Flower Ambassador, Flour Ambassador, and those are the two best ways to keep up with me.
Well, it has always been fun to have you here. It was no exception today. Great, and we will talk to you soon. Next time, you're bringing the flapjacks, though, right?
I'm bringing the flapjacks, and before then, Ray, because I don't think we're getting out of this pickle soon enough, I'll be dropping off some treats so you can taste what I make again.
God bless you, my friend. Amy Halloran, thank you for being with us today. Support comes from Pekarsky, South Deerfield, Massachusetts, family-owned since 1948, offering sausages from kielbasa to Italian to bratwurst and smoked meats, home of New England farm-made sausage, open 7 days, Pekarskys.com. And Real Pickles, a worker cooperative in Greenfield, Massachusetts, producing organic, raw, fermented vegetables sourced from Northeast family farms and found throughout the Northeast. RealPickles.com. Once again, thanks to Amy Halloran, the ambassador of flour, for being with us today. Thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. Thank you for writing. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Barb King was our call screener. Thanks to our producer, Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Now, on Monday at 2 p.m., join us for a Medical Monday. It's podiatry with Dr. Tooman. I think you'll get a kick out of that. Meantime, have a splendid weekend. Be safe. Wear the mask. We'll see you at 2 o'clock on Monday. Stand by for the best of our knowledge.